The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to Intercepted, where we talk to an enemy fan going into the upcoming Packers game. I'm Justice Mosqueda with Acme Packing Company. I'm here with my co-host for, you know, the Wednesday show for SB Nation NFL show, NFL University, Kyle Posey from Niners Nation. Say what's up to people, Kyle.
Yo, what up, man? It's a long time no talk, right?
Yeah, we only had like a meeting today, a podcast yesterday. Group chats since like 2014 or something like that.
Yeah. Wow, about, man. Which should lead us into our bet, right?
Yeah. So the reason I want to have Kyle on is this has already become competitive between he and I. I'm not nearly probably as optimistic about winning this game as Kyle is, but we have decided that the loser of this game is going to have to go on to NFL University and read off their worst takes that they've posted on Twitter. So if I lose, there's going to be a Paxton Lynch appearance. There's going to be some Kaiser takes, probably some Drew Lock takes. It's not going to be good for your boy. So I'm definitely rooting for the Packers like even more than I usually would. But just like in general, Kyle, I guess how are you feeling about this game? We ranked vibes on the post game show. We ended up with like 7 out of 10 for the team. Like, what are the vibes for San Francisco right now?
Full disclosure, Florida State fan, Jimbo Fisher. When Jimbo runs his offense the first couple of weeks, like he holds everything close to the vest. That's what I feel like Kyle Shanahan's been doing, just to unload for this game right here. And I feel quite confident.
So why do you say that he's holding things back? Is it Detroit coming back at the end of games? I didn't watch the Philadelphia game very closely, but from what my buddy Derek Clausen said, it was a great moment to push the propaganda of punts or turnovers, is what he told me.
So they actually came out of the gate aggressive on offense, and then old Jimmy G missed a couple throws, and from there it's just like, nope, we're going to put our head down. We're going to run inside zone. We're going to throw a couple spot throws and get out of here. And that's exactly what they did. So they really didn't show anything against Philly. And most of that is because the road, you know, a good defensive line, just a good team in general in both trenches. So I feel like that both of those things had a lot to do with the offensive game plan after the fact. And I don't think that either of those things are going to be an issue this week.
So Joe Barry, defensively, I don't know if he has it in him to hide things through 2 weeks, but we aren't seeing the diversity on defense that we even saw in the preseason. Maybe it's a personnel thing. You know, they weren't playing their starters in the preseason, but they were using Oren Burks as a blitzer. Isaiah McDuffie was hurt early on in the preseason, but once he came in, he was kind of playing that same role. He was finally activated this past week. I kind of think that like the Packers the best way to deploy their personnel is start Stokes instead of King, and then probably play Jair inside, because you want King and Stokes using the sideline as an extra defender. Obviously, that's going to be a little bit harder when Shanahan's playing with those wide receiver is basically like in the formation and, you know, they're not on the sideline. So it's tougher to use the sideline as a defender. But I do wonder if they're kind of hiding some of this like disguised blitz stuff for the Niners, knowing Niners were coming in week four. You know, I don't think, I mean, they were probably, I mean, they were double digit favorites last week. They might internally have thought that they were that going into the New Orleans game, and they just kind of caught them surprised by the game plan and how it ended up working out. So I wonder if they have more in the chamber than they've really been showing. But whenever your head coach comes out and says, yeah, I had to tell the DC to start, like, stop rushing four because we weren't getting home with four, that's never a great sign, you know?
Why should he have to say that? Like, what are we doing here? If you're not getting pressure, bring an extra rusher. Football 101, right?
Yeah, so, like, the thing with Barry, right, I was kind of – because it was the preseason, right, you're more interested in the structure of how things work than the actual deployment, because the deployment doesn't matter because it's not being game-planned, right? So the structure looked fine. I mean, the structure is really no different than like kind of what the Steelers do, what Fangio does. But structure and deployment are very different things. And knowing when to call things in certain situations is absolutely a trait. You know, LaFleur is great at being able to do that offensively from the sideline, which is still like, that blows my mind that you could be an NFL head coach and a sideline play caller. Those are two very tough jobs.
Two very different jobs, too.
Extremely. I mean, game day, it's completely different. I guess we could talk about that because we both have, you know, boy genius head coach, offensive play callers. Have you called plays at that high school level? Because I know you coach. Only
at the JV level, but not at the varsity level.
That's the same thing. I mean, the sight lines are the same. I mean, it's tough to call it from the sideline. I mean, you literally cannot see the far sideline. No. So you either have to trust the guy in your ear. I mean, JV, you probably don't have a guy in the box, but that is a very tough thing to do. I mean, the fact that LaFleur and Shanahan are both able to do that, like, that is a gift. Like, I don't necessarily know, like, if a guy like Brian Daboll, right, got, like, a head coaching job, I don't know if he'd be able to call plays the same way from the sideline while being a head coach.
So where does LaFleur stand? Because Shanahan stands usually either 10 to 12 ahead or, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, where I feel like you get a better glimpse of the entire field.
I'll keep an eye on it. I haven't really paid attention to it that much, frankly. I know it's near the line of scrimmage because you can see Rodgers and LaFleur bicker at each other every once in a while. He usually ends up behind, not in front of, you know, the line of scrimmage, I guess.
The only reason I know that is because Shanahan has Shanahan shenanigans on the sideline, where if Jimmy misses a throw or somebody misses a block, he just lets it all hang out as emotions, man. He wears emotions on his sleeve, and it's hilarious.
It's very, like, Lane Kiffin-ish. I've seen it before where, you know, you get the all-22 and you can see the sideline, and you see, you know, they're running – leak, which is basically like the tight end basically just creeps across the field. You like kind of forget about him, and then he just like pops up the sideline, and you just see Shanahan like before the ball's even thrown, and he's like giving the touchdown sign.
Good, you know?
Yep. Okay, let's talk about this offense then. San Francisco offensive line, how are they doing? Alex Mack is back with Shanahan. He was great with him in Atlanta. Mac probably wasn't the player that he was under Shanahan late with the Falcons, you know, last season. So what is that like?
So as far as Mac goes, he's probably not. Yeah, as you mentioned, he's not going to be the same player that people would remember him at his peak, but he's 36. So that's to be expected.
Right.
I don't think he was brought in here to pancake 300 pound defensive tackles. He was brought in to – so Jimmy stays upright. He was brought in so, you know, they can scan the field so they're not having free rushers, because that was a big problem last year. And I think, you know, he's calling protections out. He's telling the guard next to him, Daniel Brunskill, who is a former AAF player who's, you know, still really green. So he's helping him out a lot. And Jimmy admitted that he's helping himself out too. So, I mean, the real offensive line, the gym, is Trent Williams, who is unreal. Somehow keeps getting better. I don't know how it's possible.
Dude, last year, he was the best left tackle in football last year, period.
So he's better through two games. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Yeah, I don't know if he gets beat or what's going on, but his athleticism, his strength, like he knows all the tricks and the trades of playing offensive line. He has a couple go-to moves that defensive line is still yet to figure out. He works really well in tandem with the guy next to him, like in Thomason. And essentially, George Kittle's an extra offensive lineman. I don't know if you said you didn't get a chance to watch the Eagles, but he's taking edge defenders one-on-one, and he's burying them. It's pretty crazy. So the rushing lanes are there, and they're also giving Jimmy G, you know, a nice clean pocket. So no complaints from the offensive line. That was a little bit of a worry coming in just because didn't know what to expect, but they are playing very well up front. Can you say the same about the Packers' pass rush?
They're the last sackless defense in the NFL, and they also don't rush the passer well, you know?
That's tough, man.
they got one team sack because Jared Goff's small hands couldn't handle a wet ball, so he dropped it on the ground and then covered it. They didn't even give Rashawn Gary the credit for it. Rashawn Gary basically did a bull rush and then, like, was roughly in the vicinity of Jared Goff, but they didn't credit him with it. So they got a team sack, but a player has not registered a sack for the Packers. Zero tackles for losses, two games into the NFL season. Not a great start. It's definitely more of a defensive end than nose tackle issue. Obviously, Kenny Clark is still a very good football player. Problem is he's getting double teamed a lot. Dean Lowry, Kingsley Kiki, Tyler Lancaster to Darryl Slayton are the other guys on the defensive line because they haven't activated rookie UDFA, Jack Heflin, who they probably should start adding into the rotation because you need more than five defensive tackles when you're going to play a bunch of base 3-4. I definitely worry about that a little bit. I guess the big thing that I would say is how about those running backs? Are you going to be able to take advantage? Are you going to be able to take advantage of these run lanes? Because I know Mitchell's a little banged up. I know Juszczyk went down during the game, and then I think he came back. Hasty's banged up. You guys just picked up Trent Cannon from waivers off of Baltimore. He actually got into games for Baltimore. And then you guys picked up Jacquez Patrick, my boy, your boy. Hey. You're a Florida State fan, right? So
got Chris Thompson too.
Yeah, we've both seen them. So Jacquez Patrick was in the XFL. I think he deserves another shot in the league. He's a good inside runner, but you know, in this outside zone scheme, I don't necessarily see how he's kind of built to take advantage of Green Bay, you know?
So you mentioned Hasty. He's out. He has a high ankle sprain. Elijah Mitchell has a shoulder that Shanahan said was worse than a stinger. He was not at practice on Thursday. He's probably not going to play. Trey Sermon in the concussion protocol, but he has been practicing with a blue non-contact jersey. He's probably going to be the bell cow. He's going to be the guy who carries the ball. I imagine it's going to be him, Kerryon Johnson, and maybe Trent Cannon or one of the practice squad guys that they just signed up, like Patrick. But I think it's going to be a lot of Sermon. And I actually think he's going to go off this game. I think he's a lot better than, you know, since he was a healthy scratch and since he just really hasn't played. People are kind of down on him and saying he's a bust, he's this, he's that. But I think, you know, Shanahan was just challenging him pretty much. And the same with Brandon Ayuk. So I do think they will be able to take advantage. And oddly enough, even though, you know, Elijah Mitchell had rushed for over 100 yards in the first game, most of that came on that 38-yard touchdown. But he's leaving a lot of meat on the bone. I don't want to be the screenshot guy on Twitter that posts like holes here. But he definitely has, I would say, three runs last game where if it was Raheem Mostert, I felt like he would have scored on those plays. So there is no doubt that the running game will improve. And I honestly think it could be as simple as putting a different running back in there who is just more patient and, you know, finds the cutback, doesn't run into the line of, you know, the backs of his offensive line full speed with his eyes down. And that's going to be the biggest difference, I think. So I really think they're going to have some success on the ground.
Trey's interesting because you can run a lot more gap stuff with him,
right?
I think.
Which they do.
Right, exactly. I mean, they have a tough offensive line. I mean, Alex Mack's been in this system before. Trent Williams on down blocks, that's not fun. I mean, that's really – I think that's where the difference between, like, Trent Williams and even, like, David Bakhtiari come in. when I called Trent, you know, the top left tackle in football. It's not necessarily pass protection. I mean, it is amazing how Trent can move at his size. Bach is probably a better pass pro guy. But on those down blocks and stuff, I mean, Trent Williams will knock your defensive lineman off the ball. So
he'll take you from like the C to the A gap.
Right. And then McGlinchey isn't bad either. So, and Lakin Tomlinson has kind of been that guy, you know, I mean, he's basically just a run blocker. So that'll be interesting. That won't necessarily be fun outside of Kittle. I mean, how do you guys use the tight ends and fullbacks? I mean, obviously Juszczyk is kind of like that combo mismatch guy too, but is there any other tight end that we got to worry about other than Kittle and I guess Juszczyk?
Not through the air, but they have Ross Dwelly and Charlie Warner. Like those are their two. Those two backups play, and it's really just like coming across the line of scrimmage on like split zone action, or if they'll go why, they'll use the guys to kick, you know, kick the edge guy out or just climb to the second level. They're not asking much of them, but they will play, but mostly they'll be involved in the running game.
For Packers fans, I guess the reflection of that on the Packers roster would be like Josiah DeGuara, or I guess even what's his name? Dominique Daphne. They kind of use them as like smaller tight ends who can like move across the formation, find a way to get involved in the blocking game some way. All right. Passing game wise. I mean, Jimmy, let's talk about it. Jimmy Garoppolo. we talk about scripts really early on in the season and just kind of like how game flow works out, probably because of how that New Orleans game played out. Right. Where they basically got the ball for like, two drives, if you even want to call it that, and then the game just like kind of spun out of hand. Like, what do the Packers have to do to get this game to spin out of hand for Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yeah, I mean, he has missed open throws, and that's nothing new. The one way to do is just to make him uncomfortable, make him hitch, and have to go through, get off that first read. So when I say that the 49ers kind of scrapped their game plan early against the Eagles, that was because what Josh Sweat did to Mike McGlinchey on the first play. I don't know if you have a Josh Sweat, so it might not be an issue. But really, if you just take away the intermediate part of the field, like I don't know that he doesn't really look down the field. Most of it, he has two attempts beyond 20 yards to give you an idea of where Jimmy G is looking to throw the ball. But honestly, you have to do something with the receivers, get in their face, because they'll just RPO you to death, throw quick, get into guys like Debo and Kittle's hands, and they're just going to run through your face afterwards. So you really have to put the game into Jimmy G's hands, which teams always try to do. But when you get ahead of the chains, when you get it to 3rd and 4, 3rd and 3, you can't do that. And the 49ers have had a few, I think they have 4 or 5 double-digit play drives in the first two games. So they really wear you down. And a lot of that is just because they can get ahead of the chains on early downs.
Yeah, they started pressing more, the Packers did, in week 2 when they started changing up defensively. You know, the rookie Stokes ended up playing a lot more than I thought on first watch. It'll be interesting to see how they use him. I mean, this defense is definitely going to change. You know, Vernon Scott hasn't been able to be active for the entire regular season. He was banged up with a pretty bad hamstring injury throughout the summer. So he hasn't really been able to get in. So the Packers have only had 3 safeties. So like 3 safety looks aren't really viable. And then, you know, Chandon Sullivan's, I believe he had an ankle injury that kind of held him out early in the week. He's kind of their slot back. But, you know, in the game, they were using King, Stokes, and Alexander and kind of moving those guys around more and playing more press coverage, I guess, at least pre-snap. So that was interesting. I wonder if that continues. And really, I kind of wonder what the next step for this defense is, because I think after you make that corner switch, it's like, all right, how else can you improve? If you're not going to bring in outside defensive linemen, I think the answer to pressure is using a guy like Oren Burks. I don't remember if you ever saw him coming out of the draft. He hasn't played that much. Yep, the guy from Vandy, former safety. It seems like he really is like kind of coming into his own in this system, in that like, they're using him to like blitz from depth, which like if you have an undersized inside linebacker who's very fast, that's probably the way that you want to use him. You know what I mean? So
late insert.
Yep, exactly. So I wonder if they start inserting him into the lineup a little bit more. They used him in like dime looks, like very pass heavy situations, I guess is the best way to explain it. So I guess there's kind of a way to take advantage of Jimmy there. I mean, obviously we have to see him. The game's got to get played. But Trey Lance didn't get a snap last week. What's that about? I thought he was going to be a package guy.
I thought so too. But again, that last week made sense why he didn't play, just because on the road, you don't really want him to go against that defensive line. There wasn't really a part in the game flow where you felt comfortable putting him in the game, because if you pull him, or if he comes in and you pull Jimmy after Jimmy misses those throws, it's going to look like you're benching Jimmy, which, you know, the whole PR, you know, politics part of football, you can't do that. I think, especially with the running backs banged up, which pretty much all of them are banged up, why not take advantage of Trey Lance's legs this week? I think we will see more of him, Sermon, Ayuk, like all the guys, because as much as we talk about, you know, just these guys being in the doghouse, quote unquote, none of this happens if they're playing the Packers or the Seahawks or the Cardinals week one. So I think when I mentioned playing close to the vest, there's no real reason to show everything you want to show in those first few games, or in those first couple games on the road, home opener against the Packers, everybody to see. I think we're going to see a lot of that zone read, is all that QB counter, QB bash, counter bash, you name it, man. I imagine it'll be up the gut, but I do want to see how they spin off of that is my real question. I think Lance is going to play, but to what extent, I have no idea.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Mina Kimes, I was on her podcast yesterday, and she put that in the universe, you know, make it the Trey Lance game. And I was like, please, no.
That please, is not what you no. want.
Yeah. That, yeah, no, man. I've seen the Packers 3-4 defense get eaten by an option quarterback for the Niners in big games before. I do not like it. The one thing that I will say, and I think we touched on this for the NFL University show too, was, you know, RPOs and the option are kind of tied in together, in that, like, you can do them out of the same formations out of the gun, right? And it's an interesting way to basically get keep the defense honest from cheating the back, right? Because if you have an offset back, Kyle, let's say you're my running back, right? You're lined up to my left. The defense knows you have to cross over to my right to get the ball. You know right. what I mean? So a lot of the ways that these defenses are structured at every level, I mean, you can see it at high school level. I'm sure you're seeing it right now in Arizona. Teams, if you line up in the gun, they're going to cheat and they're going to set their front opposite of your back, because that's the way that the back has to go to get the ball, you know? And RPO, it's happening on the backside of the play, so you have to stay honest there. And same thing with the option, it's happening on the backside of the play. The way that they complement each other, how do you stop RPO? Well, you got to press them, you got to play man. Here's the problem. If you start running the option and instead of throwing a slant, you tell that wide receiver, hey, go block the safety. But the corner is in man, and he thinks, hey, that's a slant. Oh, wait, that's the safety. You're reading the end man on the line of scrimmage. He bites the running back. Now the sideline is open. You know, that corner has to crack or place that. And that's a very tough thing to do, especially when everything looks the same. So, oh, yeah, I mean.
There's that. There's also, and the Cardinals have started to do this a little bit, where they'll ride out the run fake, they'll bluff the block, and then they'll turn that into a route, which is pretty much cheating, especially with the way linemen are downfield these days. But there are so many different ways. And then you add in what Shanahan does before the snap with all the moving parts. We talk about that late insert with Burks potentially blitzing. They do a lot of just that backside drift route where it's just, you know, pitch and catch. He's just, that backside slant is just replacing where the linebackers came from. So it's really tough, man, with all the moving parts, with all the pre-snap motion. I know week one, the 49ers motioned before the snap 87% of the time, which was by far goodness. And away the most. Yeah, it's by far and away the most in the NFL. They're going to move. They're going to mess with your eyes. They're going to high-low you. And Jimmy does actually do a really good job of knowing where to go with the ball in that situation. So if it's just that type of offense, it will be very tough.
Last thing about the Niners offense before we hit break. One of the things that I'm worried about, we saw it a little bit against New Orleans. Speaking of like defensive structure for Green Bay, lining up to YY is going to be a problem in base. They play it in an under, which gives a bubble on the front side. The Saints took advantage of it. The Lions really didn't. I don't think that the Saints necessarily had the offensive line that even the Lions had in terms of just like pure talent, but they definitely were more creative. I think the problem that you're going to get into against the Niners is their offensive line is probably on par with the Saints in general, if not better, and their play caller is just as creative. So I wouldn't be surprised if you end up getting and when I say YY, I mean basically two tight ends lined up right next to each other. The reason that presents a problem is because the cornerback then has to fit on the outside edge, essentially. So he's basically kind of like almost like a defensive end in the run fit. There's a lot of interesting things that teams can do doing that, especially, you know, what if we option him? Then who's outside of him? You know, those kind of problems kind of present. And Shanahan definitely runs that stuff. And when those YY guys are Kittle and Juszczyk, and you can pass out of it as well as run out of it, and you can kind of get into it, into the option game with Trey Lance, that's a lot of problems to solve for. That's a lot of problems to solve for, man. Yeah.
And then by the cornerback walking up, you essentially can control what you want to do as far as passing behind him or just to that side of the ball too. So you can do so much with that out of that formation. I love it.
Yeah. Nub stuff, YY stuff. Nub is just like one tight end by himself, but no one outside of him. It creates a short edge. That's basically what it does. All right. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back to break, we'll talk about the San Francisco 49ers defense. All right, and we're back with Kyle Posey from Niners Nation. So let's talk about this defense for a little bit. Through 2 weeks of the season, who are kind of the breakout guys for the 49ers?
So I don't think people are aware of how good their safeties are. They're not really breakout because they're veterans and they've been in the league for a while, but they ask a lot from their safeties, whether it's being one-on-one, carrying three down the field, or fitting the run, playing on the line of scrimmage sometimes. For Jimmy Ward, they'll just walk him down in the slot and say, hey, take this dude. You got him. And he's very good at all of those things, and so is Jaquaski Tartt. So I would say both of the safeties have been very, very good this year. Your guy, D'Amador Lenore, looks like
Let's go Ducks, baby.
I didn't know that he could run. So I know he ran fast, but he did give up a 91-yarder last week, but it was really just him falling asleep, and I don't think he expected that route. He looks like he can cover too. So one of the big questions coming in was the secondary. Obviously, no Jason Verrett. Emmanuel Mosley was the other starter. He's been in and out of the lineup. He has practiced all week, but I think it's going to come down to Lenore if he can make plays, because there will be a bullseye on his back. He has played well through 2 weeks, but he hasn't faced any type of receiver close to the caliber of Davante Adams, obviously. So I want to see how he goes against the best of the best, not just this week, but the next 3 weeks. But it's probably Lenore after the safeties.
Okay. So cornerback, a little banged up. That's good to know. Hopefully MVS can bring one down this week. He got four targets, no receptions last week. One hit the back of a defender's head. One was just off of his hands. I think one he slipped down. Not great. Not necessarily
a good start. Just,
yeah, just – you know, you wish it were better. You know, it's not his fault. But linebacker level, obviously, Fred Warner, he is great at football. He is the best coverage linebacker in the sport, I think. Outside of that, who you got?
Yeah, so real quick on Warner, he is playing more physical this year. I don't know what's going on, but he's taking his physicality to another level. And, yeah, I don't know how he keeps getting better. Aziz Alshire is the other guy. So Dre Greenlaw went down with an injury. He's on the IR. Alshire, sneaky, might be better than Greenlaw, so I don't think there's much of a drop-off. He doesn't have the same like sideline-to-sideline speed, but he's just way more aggressive coming downhill, fitting the run. And he's not the same type of athlete, but I think he's smart enough and he's aware enough in coverage where there's not really a drop-off. So they're really good on the second level, man.
That's interesting. Green Bay is doing a lot of weird stuff with their tight ends right now. I mean, they're basically DeGuara was hurt. He sustained a concussion in week one, but they rotated the other three kind of like tight end bodies that they have. Daphne, who we already talked about, is kind of like that slicer, almost fullback type guy. He doesn't really get the ball as much as he's just kind of a blocker. Mercedes Lewis, who, I mean, he's an unbalanced offensive tackle at this point. That's who he is, and he's great in that role. And then Robert Tonyan, who's a pass catcher. I mean, they split the reps almost straight down the middle with all three of them. So that's kind of interesting.
Tonyan is good, as his numbers would suggest.
He's a really good pass catcher. I mean, I certainly like having him on the roster a lot more than Jimmy Graham. Tell you that. I mean,
he brings a lot more to the.
Yeah, I mean, they paid Jimmy Graham a lot of money, buddy.
They sure did.
Yeah. Really, the question that I have on the Packers offense is, I guess the guard positions, I mean, Josh Myers is a rookie center. He's been doing pretty solid. Billy Turner's held his own, which is kind of all you can ask from him. Elton Jenkins is doing very well at left tackle. He got beat a couple of times, but for a guard kicking outside and a guy who plays all five positions, he's doing about as good as you could ever ask for. Lucas Patrick had a concussion that happened literally the last play of week one. He was active for last game, missed a couple practices. But what ended up happening is they basically used him as like a reserve player. They played him on like PAT team, but they didn't have him go into the game. They actually started John Runyon Jr. at left guard. He did pretty good. It'll be interesting to see what their guard rotate or like who starts at left guard going into this week. And then Royce Newman, their rookie right guard, fourth round pick. He looked really good in the preseason. He struggled a little bit more in the regular season. I'm not sure really if Patrick or Newman should be starting. I guess is more of the question, because I think Runyon proved enough that he should be playing, but I guess we'll see. You know, whenever Elton Jenkins comes in, I think it's probably going to be Jenkins and Ryan at guard, and then Patrick and Newman will come off the bench, but I guess we'll have to see when Box healthy. The defensive line for the San Francisco 49ers, goodness gracious, this is gluttony, isn't it?
It should not be allowed. Like somebody should have to step in and say, hey, there's too much talent on this line. We need to break it up. They play on the other side of the line of scrimmage almost every down. It's pretty ridiculous. More Ducks love, Eric Armstead has been very freaking good so far. He doesn't have like the sack numbers to back it up, but he's in the backfield all the time. And there were a few plays last game against the Eagles where he's just walking guys back, and honestly, he's putting them on their backs. And then you get to passing down. So you went on first down, you went on second down, you get into third and long situations, and then they go, let's say they put Arden Key on the edge, and next to him will be D4 lined up on the outside shoulder of the tackle, and next to him will be this guy named Nick Bosa, and he is going to go against your right guard, and there is nobody who can help him, and that's when it's good night. When they get teams into obvious passing downs, that's when D'Amico Ryans gets creative and gets crazy, and he's just pretty much going to say, I'm going to bring five. He's going to walk Warner up, and they're just going to come at you. Everybody gets a one-on-one, and you just – if the quarterback had – obviously not this week, but if the quarterback is just a little shaky at all, then there's just not much they can do. But the front is just really ridiculous as far as winning one-on-one, playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and just winning.
It's tough, man. I mean, Eric Armstead at this point looks like he's going to have like a – Cam Hayward type of career. I think that's probably the best comparison for him for like an established vet in the league. Not that like Armstead hasn't been in the league since 2015, but I don't think people really know him as a brand, I guess. Nick right. Bosa, I mean, at some point he's going to be the highest paid defensive player in the sport's history. That's coming up the pike. D Ford, obviously a good pass rusher. Samson Ebukam, quietly a good pass rusher. Javon Kinlaw, he was the best pass rushing defensive tackle in the 2020 draft class. Kentavious Street is kind of like a – what does he even play for you guys? Because he was kind of like a hybrid end tackle, but he could get after the quarterback too.
Yeah, so he plays a little bit of one, a little bit of three. He pretty much subs in for Kinlaw. Between Kinlaw, DJ Jones, and Street, like there's so much strength there.
Yeah, DJ Jones can get after the quarterback too. He's explosive off the ball. That's
if you didn't know any better, last week the two best players on the line were Armstead and Jones. Like Jones was throwing dudes out of the way, arm over. He's so good. I don't even have words to describe how good he is. There aren't stats to back this up, but I would confidently say that he's probably up there in your favorite pass rush win rate set.
The shoulder pad chips. They've never been wrong before. I talked to I think the second highest graded guy is the nose tackle from Jacksonville, who our buddy Eric Stoner. I was texting him and he was like, dude, this nose tackle is the worst player I've ever seen. I looked up like two minutes later, because I was bullying Mina Kimes about the Packers run stop win rate, because they were ranked like fourth in the league even though they don't have a single tackle for loss. So I sent it to him. It was the same guy. And he goes, the number two guy on their list was literally benched last week. So I don't know, guys. I think measuring football talent through shoulder pad chips is kind of bad process.
Might not work, huh?
Yeah. I think there's some limitations there. Not to say that they're doing, I mean, ESPN probably told them, do the best that you can. We're just trying to make hashtag content. It's probably not the content creator's fault, but we're probably going to have to do a little better than that, guys. So I'm actually more worried about this San Francisco defensive line than I am of the offense, just because of how you guys deployed Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance last week. Because I'm not really that worried about Jimmy.
You have no reason to be based on what you've seen so far. So, yeah, that's for sure fair. But if we get back to the defensive line, I don't think they've played as well as they could have, which is pretty crazy to say. I think that, we're in a situation, especially, home crowd. The defense in 2019 lived off the home crowd. Like, it seemed like every third down before the snap, they're jumping up and down, waving up and down to get the crowd going up. And when that happens, man, they feed off each other. So I'm interested to see who all plays or how much they play. Javon Kinlaw played 72% of the snaps last week, which was a ton. I don't really think he was over 60 last year at all. But if
that's
he can
a lot
get
for
them,
a defensive tackle. I mean, those are
it's
big
a
boys.
Ton. So he's playing like the one a lot of times too. So he's having to hold his point against the double teams. That's not easy. It's not an easy ask at all. So. But he played at a high level, so why not leave him out there if he's going to be playing like that?
Yeah, that's more than fair. I'm not buying it, man. I'm not buying the, hey, they're not playing as good as they probably should be. Just, don't worry about him. I'd be freaked out every night if I'm Matt LaFleur.
Oh, no.
Getting like 3 hours of sleep.
To be clear, I'm saying they're going to be better than they have been. I think this is more of a coming out type of party to show people who they are. I really think, players feed off of that. I mean, whether it's numbers, whether it's not having a home game, whether it's playing on a primetime game, that they know all eyes will be on them, so they're going to want to show out.
Yeah, and both coaching staffs have already talked about it, about the crowd noise. I mean, I saw Shanahan early on in the week was like, yeah, get to the parking lot, as soon as possible, drink, play cornhole, get real rowdy for this game. It's Sunday Night Football. There's a long track before the game, and then the Packers were talking about how, they're implementing their silent count stuff a lot more, during practice this week. So sound is a factor. I mean, it makes it tough on a lot of things. What's one of the weirdest things that I learned about how college football teams mitigate sound? It was when I was working with the XFL, and we were talking to an SEC coach who was basically like, yeah, LSU just steals a bunch of signs, and Joe Burrow might not be that guy at the NFL level because like what LSU is doing is like not really replicable for the NFL football. But he was saying Lane Kiffin, his whistle is how he audibles. And apparently that whistle carries even in stadiums of crowds of 100,000 people.
Interesting. I would never guess that.
No, it's so weird. Like the gremlin brain of coaches where they're like, no, I like need this tool. And the way that they're able to find ways to make those tools like actually functional. It's weird.
I wonder what all they had to go through to get to the whistle to work.
you think he trained for the whistle? Like he had to learn like a whistling technique?
Well, yeah, there's no way they started with a whistle and were like, okay, this is what we need. It was probably some other BS and then gravitated toward or evolved towards using that whistle.
Yeah. Okay, predictions. What do you got, bud?
Woo! I think it's going to
say it with your chest. Say it with your chest.
Fast start. And then we're going to see, defense start to settle in. 27-21, home team.
I'm with you. I just hope that it doesn't spin out of control. I really hope that they're able to keep up in this game. I mean, obviously, when you have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, it's great. I'm just not confident enough in the defense right now. They might not be deploying their guys in the right way. They might not be calling the right plays in the right situations. having the right level of aggressiveness for what the situation demands. Those are kind of my concerns right now. Hopefully, the combination of Jimmy Garoppolo and that rotating cast of running backs is enough to keep Green Bay in the game as they try to kind of like figure themselves out throughout the season or You know, maybe Joe Barry has something hidden, you know, in his sleeve, but I'm not necessarily going to count on that. I think San Francisco wins. It's short, you know, one score. Hopefully the Packers don't start out 1-2, but I'm a lot less confident in this game than I was the first two games of the season. And they got drubbed the first game of the year, and they let the Lions stay, you know, neck and neck with them for the first half of last week.
I was more confident in the Eagles keeping it close last week than the Packers would this week. Just
oh, that's a tough pill to swallow. Oh, yeah. We're going to clip that if we win. So I'm going to make you eat that one. All right. Tell the people where to find you, KP.
You can find me at KP_show on Twitter. Every now and then I'll drop something on YouTube under Kyle Posey. So please subscribe so I can feed my family.
Attaboy. And subscribe to the APC feed. Keep reading the website. Click on ads, things of that nature. 5-star reviews, comments. Everything helps. Thanks, guys.